A beacon shining in the night, faster than a bolt of light, cloaked but hiding in plain sight.
Their mission, to help the Green Arrow fight the darkness, corruption, and bring hope.
We are strong.
We are many.
We are the Arrow Squad.
Hi, this is Stephen Amell.
Hi, I'm Juliana Harkavy, and you're listening to Arrow Squad with Cammy the Chameleon and my favorite, Martin the Flash.
And listen to this, or my fictional alter ego will hunt you down. Enjoy.
Hello, Arrow Squad. This is Martin the Flash.
And this is Cammy, and we are back with episode 15 of season 7 entitled Training Day. Flash, how much training actually got done in this episode?
It was minimal, if not at all, but it's kind of funny.
It is. Well, Flash, we always start with some news items, but I almost kind of don't want to talk about our news item for this week.
Oh, yeah, and we actually haven't had much news to really lead with in a while, but our fearless leader, the Green Arrow himself, Stephen Amell, broke the news on social media. In case any of you out there have not heard yet and have not been following anything, we wanted to just bring it up real briefly here, that Arrow is now being closed out after season 8.
Yeah, we are getting one more season after this full season, mm-hmm. and that one more season of season 8 will have 10 episodes, so it will be a farewell season. It won't be a full 22-plus episode season like we've got before. And it will air, I believe, starting in fall of this year, and that will be the end of the show Arrow. Now, of course, they've already said that a lot of the Arrow characters may be popping up on some of our other shows. There's speculation on which other shows in the Arrowverse may be ending and which ones may consolidate into the two that I think we know are getting full seasons after this one, which are Supergirl and The Flash. But for the world specifically of Arrow, it will end after a farewell season of season 8.
Yeah, and I don't know if anyone has seen the video that Stephen Amell posted. I put it on our Facebook group. It brought me to tears when I watched it because he was barely hanging on, fighting back the tears as he's letting everybody know. And it brought me to tears watching him get so emotional about it. And I was thinking about that. This is crazy because everybody kind of knew this was coming, but I don't think anyone expected the news to hit this early on. It's something you would expect to hear maybe as they're releasing season 8 or something, like, hey, but guess what? This is going to be the end. But we're finding out now, and it was a shock, and everyone's worked through their emotions a little bit about it. But what I want to reiterate here is just remember, we still got quite a few episodes left of this season, and then we still have next season. So let's finish this one out strong. We got a lot of fun to be had still, and we still got next season to go through, and that's I worked through the emotions. It hit like a shock, and I was very upset because I was thinking about what Arrow has meant to me, the show that started it all, this entire Arrowverse. What's it going to mean for the Arrowverse once you shut down the main show that kicked everything off? I mean, everybody has Arrow to thank for where they are today, the actors, the crew, all the other TV shows. And then, of course, Arrow Squad and our community. And we'll talk a lot more about this as we get to the end. But I just wanted to mention right now that Arrow brought me to podcasting. Podcasting brought me to Arrow Squad. We took over their show, you and me, Cammy. And I've been having such a spectacular time these last couple seasons with you that it's like an arrow to the heart. I don't want to have to say goodbye to any of this just yet.
Yeah, it's been a fantastic journey. I loved when I first showed up on this podcast. It was when Kevin and Brian were on, and they brought me on just for one specific episode, and that was a Felicity Smoke special after I met Kevin at DragonCon at an Arrow panel. Yeah. And then they were like, hey, you want to keep going? You want to come next week and the week after that. And I just had a wonderful time with them. And I had a wonderful time transitioning to being a co-host with you as well, Mr. Flash. And I know we have 17 episodes left of Arrow. I'll be sure to count down every week, as sad as that is.
Yeah.
And I'm going to enjoy all 17. Exactly. But for now, we have one very special episode, and that's today's episode, which is Training Day. And fittingly enough, I think this was one of the more popular and well-received episodes, so it's nice to have this sad news while on a high.
Yeah, well, let's get right into it, into this Training Day.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to kick it off because I was so over-exuberant about this episode. I'm giving it a 9.5 back to our roots because I absolutely love this episode. Even though it wasn't heavy on main season story arcs or deep issues to deal with, it really felt like good old classic Arrow that we have been all clamoring for. The team got back together. The Arrow Cave is all fixed up. Everyone suited up and went out on a mission. It felt like home. It felt comfortable. It felt like a fresh sigh of relief and a great positive step moving forward as the season starts to accelerate towards its finale, especially after all the darkness and corruption, the lying and the betrayal that we've had to deal with, the team and us, the viewers, have had to deal with. It just felt so good. I ended that episode with such a big smile on my face. And I went running upstairs to my partner, Lisa, and I said, "Oh my God, that was such a good episode." And she just looked at me. She goes, "You're crazy." Yeah.
That is so cute. That is the kind of reaction you want after an episode. I really enjoyed it as well. My rating is not quite as high as yours. It's a 7.5 out of 10. But that's because I was sort of in an unusual position where I disliked the premise of the episode, but I loved the characters involved. There were really almost no characters. There was one kind of that I was questioning their choices, but there were almost no characters where I was really questioning their choices. Their motivations made sense. The performance made perfect sense. Everything was really well delivered. And we got to see our heroes in an odd and uncomfortable position. And the way that they played that and made the most of that was just fantastic. And they were in a position where you could empathize with the kind of gray areas that they were having to deal with. Now, with that said, I'm so disenchanted with the idea of Team Arrow collabing with the police just at all. I think that that's not at all in keeping with the premise of being a vigilante. I understand the necessity of exploring the storyline, so I'm not opposed to it, you know, being shown on screen, of course. This is fiction. That's great. I just hope they move through it quickly and within it evaluate the impact of this concept on the concept of vigilante justice. That just has to do with the plot. The characters, however, were fantastic.
Yeah, well, I think they did kind of go through it pretty quickly. I think it's just going to be kind of a one-off. I mean, we see how the episode ends, which we'll get to. But I think this was kind of a transition episode because of all the problems that they were dealing with, trying to work with the police force and dealing with the mayor, and nobody's on the same side. So this episode had to happen, whether you liked it or not. It had to happen to kind of work to where it ended. And I thought it was fun. I understand your points. And I don't disagree with the concept of it. But it was still fun to see them have to go through it and see how uncomfortable everybody was. It was pretty funny to me.
Yeah, it's fun to see them uncomfortable. But I don't think they've explored exactly, and we'll get into this in the discussion, they haven't really explored how what they're doing is not in keeping with the concept of being a vigilante hero and what they've sort of sacrificed from the morality of it in doing this. And again, we'll get to this when we're talking about the heroism, but if they don't do that, that kind of makes the storyline fall flat to me. But, you know, just the general discomfort and silliness for a week is kind of cute. All right. Well, we got some pre-show feedback from our friend Aaron, Okay. And she always sends us, you know, these long, detailed, wonderfully thought out blog post comments. Well, this week, her long, detailed, wonderfully thought out blog post comment was so long that it actually became two. So you know that last week's episode, Brothers and Sisters, really had a lot to say that spoke to her. So just as a general comment, one of the things I noticed she said that I thought was really funny and true is she just said villains aren't Arrow's strong point. And I have to say that's true. They too often try to redeem them to the point of making them not a villain anymore or make them such a villain that they don't make sense as a person. There's sort of that sweet spot in there that they kind of hit for a short time with Slade and with Prometheus where they were evil but you could kind of understand their motivation, but they don't often get there with the show and I'm not really sure why. But she talks about that in, of course, the context of Black Siren's redemption, which was, while I won't say solidified, really clearly moved along last week in Black Siren's storyline with Felicity and Felicity's pregnancy and the protection that Black Siren seems to be offering her. Mm-hmm. Aaron does admit that there's some cute moments between them, but she does want to reiterate that they absolutely have to have Black Siren stay evil for her to be long-term in this show, and I quite agree.
I think she said that a few times by now.
Yeah, she has. She wants to caveat that she doesn't hate the Ghost Initiative. She just hates Diaz. She says they're basically Suicide Squad, so it's weird to hear them say Ghost Initiative, but she'll take it. She also says it's frustrating to hear everyone constantly act like Laurel and Siren are interchangeable, and I would agree that that's almost getting to the point of being a plot hole as to why everyone's just okay with seeing them as the same person. Is the same face really that confusing for them? I'm not sure. She also says she agrees with the comments that I was making, and I think you were making as well, about Emiko having a right to not trust Oliver. And she says she wants to appreciate how it took Dinah untying Zoe to get her free from the chair. She thought that was very cute. She has some comments as well for some of our feedbackers, and I won't go through that, but I will say if you write feedback on this show or send audio feedback on the show, there's a good chance that Miss Erin has replied to you in her blog post, so go check that out, and you can also reply back.
Yeah.
And that is the high points of her feedback from this week, but there's a lot more, so feel free to go check it out. We almost every week get some good blog post feedback. In the comments.
Yeah, and that's on our website at the GSM Aero Squad website.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Where there's always a link that we put up in the notes here. So definitely.
Yeah.
Aaron's pretty much the only one that ever really posts there. So if you guys want to respond to her there and everything, then go for it. It'd be cool to see conversation happening.
Yeah, we sometimes get a couple others, but you're welcome to go chat on there. And we always have some other resources linked on our website and some pictures of me in the Flash as well.
Yeah, in case you don't know what we look like yet.
Yeah, well, I'm, you know, a lizard villain that takes on human form once in a while. But anyways, thank you, Aaron, for those high points. And now, Mr. Flash, I think we should transition to our high points from this week's episode.
I hear that. All right, so I'm taking it. I'm going first again, as per usual.
Well, I think so. We're going in alphabetical order. Actually, that's not alphabetical order at all. Well, we'll just let you go first regardless.
But I'm the Flash. I'm faster than you, so I'm always going to come first, right?
That's fair. I'll allow it.
If that's the way we could look at it. Even though I always, in life, it's ladies first all the time. But
well, isn't the Flash's thing that he's always late, even though he has super speed?
Yeah, in the comics and stuff, it's pretty funny.
He's anyways, late for your work. Favorite moment. I'm sorry.
That's okay. So let's talk about a few of them, because this episode was so much fun, like I said. Now, right off the hop, we get a hilarious collage of each character showing that they're way overskilled compared to their police force counterparts. I so loved that opening, as they're all one by one trying to be you know, attentive and listening to what their police force counterparts are trying to teach them, and they're just way beyond past them in skills and knowledge. And I loved it. It was so much fun. There really isn't any audio from that part. I just wanted to mention that scene because that's one of the best openings we've had in a long time. The next thing I want to talk about is which I actually think is the absolute best scene in the whole episode, and that was having our team back together and out in the field again, and having Dinah still being the canary. Just seeing them all in their suits, working together, being a team, makes my Flash heart very happy. So that, to me, was the best moment. But it's too big of a scene for me to pull an audio clip from. That, to me, is my favorite moment. But for the audio sequence, what I did go back to, which is some of my other favorite parts, is that moment when Dinah shows up at the rebuilt Arrow Cave, and immediately her and Oliver apologize to each other. That moment to me shows that they've both grown, they've both learned from their mistakes, and that they respect each other now and again. And they're trying from this point forward to go about things the right way and be more true to each other. And I loved that moment. I loved the inflections in their voice, how soft they were with each other, how honest and open and just really, like I said, really true to each other. I love that moment. And then from there, later on the episode after the mission, when Dinah comes back to the cave with everybody and she tells them that she worked out a new deal with the mayor to allow them to work as a vigilante task force under the law, was equally just a great scene. I love that moment as well. So I kind of spliced those two together. This episode was just, it's so much sighs of relief. And that's why I felt so satisfied by the end of this one. So here's my two moments strung together.
Wow. Why'd you guys call us here?
To apologize.
We shouldn't have gone off book to go after Midas.
I appreciate that. And while we're clearing the air here, I'm sorry too. Okay? It was hard on you. It was too hard.
You guys want a hug or something?
Why don't we save the hugging until after we catch Midas?
You know what else we did tonight? We forced Pollard's hand. I leveraged her relationship with Midas to convince her to sign off on creating a special vigilante task force. We're still sanctioned by the SCPD, but we're operating as our own unit. Out of the bunker, in our suits.
And the anti-vigilante law?
It's on her desk for appeal. She's gonna sign it.
So we're like the black ops for the SCPD now? That's cool.
I'm just glad we're all back. It feels right.
Second that. It's nice to be part of a team again.
And be here. The bunker. The
sweet
bunker.
I think Renee had some fun lines this episode. He delivered them so well. But those moments, I just love them. It's just our team again. And yeah, I felt good.
Yeah, I thought Renee did have some funny lines. There was one, though, where they really pushed it, where they had him say hashtag read faster.
Yeah.
And I know what they're trying to make him cool or whatever, but I thought that was just kind of odd. It reminded me of on The Flash when they had one of the girls say hashtag feminism or something during like Iris's bachelorette party. Mm. And I was just like, "Ooh, we can slow down there." Anyways, it's Renee, though, so I always got to give him a hard time.
Yeah.
I liked your team moments had to do with reconciliation.
Hmm.
And I think that's what we see a lot in this episode is reconciliation across teams, for better or for worse. Because again, not to be a Debbie Downer, I would still caveat that a lot of these team members shouldn't necessarily work together, not under these conditions, but they're trying to reconcile, which I think is important and heroic and all of that. And under the sort of forced collaboration that they have now with the police, the government, and now also with each other, I think they're doing the best they can. And this episode could have been filled with a lot of conflict, and instead they made sure to inject it with moments where parties that otherwise wouldn't work well together or even shouldn't work well together do try to work well together, which is good.
Mm-hmm. But I do think by the end of this episode, the team really gelled. I mean, that's why it felt so comfortable to me. It's like these guys are meant to be together. This is our team going forward. This is who we have. I don't think they're going to introduce any new members anymore. This is how we're going to end the show, is with these guys. So to have them together, working together, honest and open with each other, it just felt, like Diggle said, it felt right. And I love the part with Dinah that she, and I'll talk about her later, but I just love that she went out in her suit, even after everything she dealt with. We'll talk about that. But I just love that she was there and the team supported her and wanted her to be there too.
Yeah, it's all kind of, I mentioned this as well in our discussion points. It's all kind of heartwarming, but ominous, because we know that in the future, if this is the future, which it sounds like, you know, we had kind of talked about last week, we suspect it might be the real future.
Yeah.
If it is, they don't stay together forever. They don't fight together forever. They don't stay in each other's lives, or in some cases even stay alive, or in other cases maybe even stay good. Yeah. And for now they're trying, though. And it's probably a futile attempt. You know, this isn't The Flash. They are not probably going to get a shiny, happy, unwarranted ending or anything like that. But they're going to get a meaningful ending. So,
yeah.
I think that kind of ties into the scene that I picked, where I picked the scene where OTA comes together to discuss the option of reforming the trio, quote unquote, the only way we know how to save the city. And in that moment, they also reveal to Diggle that they're doing this for their child, and he gets the reveal that they're having a child. And it's dark in contrast to what happens to their kids in the future, the kids that they're talking about. But it's bright, it's nostalgic, and it's a bit of a throwback in that moment, because these are the only three surviving characters who have been around really since season one. Everybody else is not only new, they're kind of very new. They're new in the way where they didn't show up till just two seasons ago in season five, right?
Yeah.
So there's this level of history we get on screen when we see our season one originals, right? And, you know, with so many other heroes or anti-heroes or sort of heroes or wannabe heroes or whatever floating around, we don't always get to see just the three of them on screen. And it's really only the last two episodes, I think, we've really got to see that. So it's really been a bit of a treat. And it was a nostalgic bit. There's several great moments with this trio throughout. So it's nice having them be back on the same page again.
Yeah, well, that's been the story arc, is them being separated by, whether by personal feelings or by circumstances, you know, the prison and stuff like that as well. They've been separated for so long. So that, I think that really helped build the emotion of this moment, where just with these three, it also felt very comfortable, very at home, and this is what we've been missing. All right, well, I got your clip here, Cammy. We'll just talk about it after, because I think there's lots to say. It's such good moments in this episode. Here it is.
I would like for you to be on board with this, but if you're not, I would ask you to stay out of our way.
Oliver, I will always have your back. But you're giving up on this partnership before you're really giving it a chance, as if you're up against a clock I don't know about. So what don't I know about?
We're having a baby.
Really?
Yeah. It's a little early. We're not telling anybody.
That's amazing. This is wonderful. It would also explain a hell of a lot.
We don't want a child born into a city like this. Our mission is not complete.
So we're going to go about this the only way that we know how, without politicians and without a precinct. We're going to do this the Team Arrow way.
Okay, and that would work for a while. And then I have to say, we would be right back to where we started, Oliver. Without a team, you in prison, us on the run, and a city no closer to being saved than where we started.
Our partnership with the Force is not working.
They have to find a way to make it work. Compromise. Do whatever you have to do, because if you want a new future for this baby of yours, it won't come by doing the same thing we used to do. We have to be something else. Something better.
Oh man, that Diggleism right at the end there, where he uses Oliver's line, "We have to be something else," and then he says something better. That was beautiful. Well delivered.
I know I always say this after clips, but I love the music as well. It was so subtle here. We really just got, you know, just some really mild building background noise, and they let the voices shine throughout. That was such a good scene. And yeah, it really presented the key conflict of the episode as well. This choice between compromising and working with, you know, the politicians and all of that, or going off and doing things on their own. And that's that true vigilante, you know, split that we'll get into.
Mm-hmm. And like I was saying, it's just, it was so comfortable to see the three of them together, getting along, figuring things out. Oliver and Felicity have an idea, Diggle gives them the wisdom, and they come to a collective agreement. It was just so, oh, wow, this is so cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree.
So what you got for us today for discussion points, Cammie?
Well, first off, I thought we'd kick it off with our heroes, since it sounds like between you and I, the heroes are really what is clicking for us this episode. And I thought they took front and center. We see our heroes team up with the cops this week. It's sort of the next step outcome in their ongoing attempt to go legitimate and make peace with the Star City government, mayor, and politicians. So, Mr. Flash, what did you think of this partnership?
Well, like I said, it started off really funny in the opening. I mean, we all knew it wasn't going to work out between the cops and our team. So you're basically constraining our heroes to subpar levels of performance and rules that just don't work for them. I mean, they're totally being undermined. Plus, they're also getting embarrassed by having to wear cop uniforms. But I thought it was just great to see the difference in the two ways of dealing with things, although it really made the police look incapable for quite a while there. Until near the end of the episode, the police force just looked like amateurs in every aspect. I loved that scene with Renee when they're all in the precinct there, and they're kind of being snarky with each other. And he says, "Yeah, the Glades, you know, that place you always forget about." To me, the way he delivered it was such a great way to say that line, because it kind of hints at the direction of his future that we saw with him leading the Glades and stuff. So I like that kind of cue in there. It was also good to see Dinah back up and going again and doing all right, because we didn't know. She wasn't really there last episode. And to see her back on her feet and she's back being the captain, it was just really good to see. And man, did you see that gray suit? Wowzers! Again, just the one little bit about Felicity kind of bugged me. When they're all in the precinct and they're having their meeting and they're doling out instructions and they're figuring out the plan or whatever, and she just keeps coming in and interrupting. I actually wanted to tell her to shut up, because she's sounding more like a spoiled brat with no manners. And I was just sitting there going, come on, Felicity, really? Like, just be quiet and pay attention like everyone else is. Act a little grown up. It was kind of bugging me in that scene, the way she was behaving. I don't know why the show is doing this with her character, these little moments of just annoyingness. It's just strange. I don't know. But anyway, I loved the rest of it. It was a lot of fun, the whole banter back and forth between the cops and their team, and, you know, kind of jostling for who's better, who has the right way.
Yeah, I saw this in your notes, and it kind of threw me, because I thought Felicity was fantastic throughout this episode, and I thought that in many scenes that were boring, tedious, and not a premise explored as far as it could, mm-hmm. she was the only one offering dialogue that was engaging, in keeping with a show that's supposed to be fiction, that is entertaining, and true to character in moments where the rest of them were forced to be sort of not in their usual character. But when you said that, I was like, oh, let me go back and listen to that, see if I can catch that. And to the other characters' credits, I found that, including Renee particularly, but also a couple quips from Oliver, they were actually all interrupting that scene, making comments, making little quips and jokes and funny things. And it wasn't just her. Hers just happened to be the funniest, so they were the only ones I noticed the first time around. But upon further review, I think they all were a little bit disrespectful in the police environment, which I was totally okay with, because the police environment would otherwise be not so entertaining. But what is entertaining to one is probably disrespectful to another. So that is fair. But you mentioned Dinah a little bit, mm-hmm. back up and doing okay. That's sort of my next question for you as well. And then we'll get back to sort of our hero conflict and vigilante definitions and all of that. How are you feeling about the Lost Cries storyline? They explored a bit more this episode.
I really liked how they worked with that story arc this episode, because she comes back, she's feeling good, she's confident, and it's not until she's out in the field that she finds out her voice isn't quite back yet, and it caused a lot of pain, which I think surprised her when she tried to scream. So this is my thought process here. What I'm wondering is if it still needs healing, because she just got out of the hospital, the scar is healing. You know, she just got released. She's back at work. She hadn't had to scream yet. She didn't know if it was going to be fully healed on the inside yet. Now, what we're all assuming is that she can't scream based on what we've seen in the future flash forwards. Everyone is saying, oh, she can't scream. She can't scream. She's never screamed. But think about it. This came to me last night. In the future scenes that we've all seen, she has had absolutely no reason to use her canary cry. Her scenes have all been with the younger team members doing investigating and searching with only a small kind of disagreement fight amongst themselves. And she's definitely not going to blow them away with a canary cry. So we actually don't know yet if she can't use it in the future. So that's why I'm wondering if it's just taking some time to heal in the present day, and we might see it come out in the future. Who knows? Anyway, back to the present day. When she realized that her scream wasn't there yet at full potential, we didn't see her collapse into a whiny baby about it. We didn't see her get all depressed. We didn't see her, you know, have this bottoming out story arc. She dealt with it. She worked through it, and she rose to the challenge of still being Canary without her cry for now. So it was a nice little rounded arc within an episode, and I just want to really give praise to Juliana, because her performance, when she's expressing everything to the team of what's going on, her performance was so heartening and so real, and I loved it. So I just this little arc within this story, or within the episode, was beautiful.
Yeah,
and we're moving forward from it.
Yeah, in Dinah's defense as well, if she were to be sort of depressed or make bad choices or, you know, change her mind often throughout or not be able to evaluate situations very well because she's upset about losing her powers or whatever, I think she'd be well within her right to. And, we see some emotional and judgmental sort of differences in her without her powers. But I think that's necessary in the writing of this, because we would never expect a hero of any kind to be depowered without it impacting the rest of their psyche. That would be such an unreasonable expectation. And it would also deny the character and actor the ability to sort of play very difficult emotions. So I think it's important with a character like Dinah, who's going through an arc like this, and with all of the characters who go through dark arcs, to make sure that our expectations are such that we are expecting and understanding, or, you know, empathizing with these characters who are not going to be in a position to be their best. They're going to be in the position to be their most interesting and respond to what's thrown at them. And heroes like Dinah, Oliver, Diggle, Felicity, all of them, they will shine in some moments and they will fall in some moments, and it makes the shining moments stronger when we have seen them fall. So in this episode, I do think Dinah had the opportunity and did go through the opportunity to have some lapses in judgment or have some moments where she is having to apologize or she's having to take back what she said or she's not being her best. But that's because she's a real character, and that's important. She cannot just always run around, look hot as hell and scream and be a full character. So
yeah.
If we see her have lapses in the future, I'm here and ready to defend those lapses, because we want well-rounded women.
Yeah, and I 110% totally agree with you. But why I like the way they dealt with it in this episode is because I feel like we've seen her bottom out a lot worse before, when her ex died.
Oh, certainly. Yeah, she's partnered with villains. Yeah. She's gone after our heroes. She's made terrible choices. Right. That all of our heroes have done so, yeah.
So the way that this was wrapped up within one episode is what I appreciated. And I appreciated how it shows that she's become stronger from her past experiences. She was able to deal with it and handle it and find a way to work through it to at least to a point where she could still work with the team and still do her job and still, you know, be a positive part in all of it. So I just think it looked great on her character to be able to do that within the arc of one story. So,
yeah, well, as we mentioned already in our favorite moments and in sort of what we've discussed of our heroes, we get to see plenty of our core characters in this episode. We get to see our last three surviving characters from season one be in the same room, which is unique and fun. And it was kind of nice following that Arrow ending announcement. So what are you hoping for them, not in the next 17 episodes perhaps, but just in the next 7 episodes for this team?
What I want to see is just see the team regroup, get their team chemistry back and going full tilt, and deal with the issues at hand. Because I think right now, they only just introduced Dante. It's hard for us to say how this season is going to wrap up at this point. I mean, we only have a few episodes left, but I really don't have a clue where they're going leading into the finale. I just want to see the team. We had the way this episode ended. I want that to lead into them, you know, like a full episode of them working together. And I'm looking forward to just good old classic Team Arrow adventures to start again, to finish the season out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you mentioned classic Team Arrow adventures. Do you know what that requires, Flash?
What does it require?
It requires some villains, and I think we should talk about them.
You're now, sneaky.
Not to throw Bronze Tiger in with the true villains, but I do want to lead with him because I thought he was really interesting. Did you catch his reference to his son being named Connor? And do you suspect that that is tied to our future?
This is how I'm going to respond to you. Oh, come on. It's the perfect answer to what we were wondering about last week. Connor is his son. And for some reason, which I'm sure we're going to see, Bronze Tiger goes down and either asks Diggle to take care of him, take care of his kid, or Diggle steps in to take care of him because they build some kind of teammateship, some kind of friendship. So I'm hoping that we see all of that takes place and we see why Diggle would do that. I'm hoping that Bronze Tiger is going to get out of prison, join the team, because I think that would be super cool to see, especially with how well him and Oliver work together in the prison. I want to see Bronze Tiger slide over to the vigilante side and be a good guy before his demise, because I found him absolutely one of the best characters we've had in the last two seasons. The actor, he's got such commanding screen presence. Every time it's his booming voice, and when he stands up, he just commands the TV screen, and I love his character, so I want to see some good for him in these last few episodes, if indeed they're going to bring him to his demise, which leads to why Connor has to be adopted.
Yeah, I think he's kind of in a place where he's almost somewhere between a villain and an anti-hero as well. So it wouldn't take too much of a nudge to get him over there. Yeah. And with Arrow being the show it is, a lot of our heroes become anti-villains, often anti-heroes, anti-villains as well. A lot of our heroes become anti-heroes once in a while. It's a show with a lot of gray area, and our villains become anti-heroes, and they all kind of live in that space. But particularly in this episode, living in that anti-hero space, we see Emiko and Black Siren, and they had their little confrontation there. What do you think of our anti-hero ladies this episode?
What I found interesting is that Emiko knew as much about Siren as Siren knew about her. Now, I'm wondering, like, is she getting her info from our new bad guy, Dante, or is she finding that out on her own? I love the interaction. It was a really good scene. You could feel the tension between the two of them, and as they're staring each other down, I found that interesting. So I don't know where that's going to go from here. I don't know if that's going to bring Siren back out, and we're going to see her use her scream, because she's been pretty much sidelined to office work. I'll have to see where it goes.
Yeah, she hasn't got to go around and kill people in a while, which we know is one of Siren's favorite pastimes, or was.
It used to be, yeah.
Which I'll allow it. And while Emiko may also be growing more villainy by the week, she did kill Diaz, so she gets a bit of a pass in my book. That's a little heroic, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, well, I mean, heroic, I don't know. I like lighting a guy on fire while he's in a prison cell. It's not heroic to me, but
it's not just any guy. It's Diaz.
That's true. I know. Like I said, I heard the collective cheer from everyone around the world. But what I like is that we're getting answers every single week. There's no waiting to find things out anymore. So that answers that. I mean, the episode ends with that, and we're all in complete shock. What? Who did it? How? And everybody was guessing Siren, but it wasn't her. She didn't even know that Diaz was killed. So that, right off the bat, gave us, what? Okay, if it's not her, who could it be? Well, and then we immediately find out it's Emiko. So, boom. Answers. Just like that. No waiting. Within half an episode from last week, we get our answers and we move forward. I love the progression that this season has given us all of a sudden. Now, my question is, how did Emiko get into Argus to be able to do that? How does she have access?
Yeah, it seems like the villains may have a bit more power on their side. Not that I'm calling Emiko necessarily a villain, but it seems that the assorted bad guys we have running around may have more power on their side, or some infiltration going on, perhaps.
Perhaps. Now, one thing I wanted to just have a quick mention here was the blackout gang in the beginning with those acid bullets. That's some pretty nasty weapons to be out on the streets that the cops have to deal with. So I wonder if that's going to come back again. Even though we saw them blow up the truck full of chemicals, who knows if the black gang will be, or blackout gang will be anything. Those acid bullets on the streets is a pretty nasty thing to have to deal with. So I wonder if that is done with or not.
Yeah, I like when they incorporate sort of weapons based on tech, weapons based on weather, weapons based on chemicals, just anything other than meta powers makes the show sort of kind of fun. It pushes the boundaries of what we might expect, and it's not quite grounded in reality, but it's also not so far out there to where it feels not Arrow.
Well, it's believable because you can imagine that there's some scientist out there being held against his will, being forced to create a bullet that can melt you from the inside. Once that you get shot with it, it disintegrates, and you can imagine that sounds like something pretty attainable to me. So it does ground it.
Yeah, especially when we get into some of the types of weaponry and technology that they show in the flash forward scenes, and it's supposed to be 2040, I believe, is the year there. We see them push that boundary just a little bit further, but again, not so far as to be unreasonable where it takes us out of the show entirely.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, the future is a part of this episode that exists as well. And the kids in the future finally got a true mission together. It's not just these little flash forwards of narrative. It's a full plot line. And it feels like these flash forwards are finally picking up storyline speed. So what did you think of William and Maya and their focus this episode?
You know, interesting the way you led that off with, when I'm thinking about it, this episode seemed bigger and longer than the 42 minutes that it was. There was a lot in it, and it was all stretched out very well. Nothing seemed rushed, and yet we got a lot. And now, because this future stuff, like, oh man, this was some of the best future scenes we've had yet. What fun to watch them learning to work together, and so opposite Oliver and Felicity. It's like they switched roles, because where Felicity is more the nerdy one dealing with all the tech and stuff, now it's William, the male character, being the nerd who doesn't know how to handle himself in the field. And Mia is the punch first, ask questions later badass like her father. I loved it. And I loved when William said, the you have failed this city line. And she's like, what the hell is that? And he's, oh, my dad used to say it. Like I loved their interactions. I loved how she was just taking no guff from anybody. And he's the one that's fumbling and goofing around. It was fun. It was a really great string of scenes together that they got to have.
Yeah, they are so interesting in contrast with each other, because they both have two very different sides of Oliver and Felicity, both within themselves. So I would say that Mia has Oliver and Felicity's cutthroatness, their some of their darkness, some of their ability mm-hmm. to fight and make quick judgments. And William has the brilliance that they both seem to have. Obviously, he has some of the more literal book smarts that Felicity has, but he's also pretty good at strategy at some points and in some ways,
yeah.
and evaluation in ways that are very similar to Oliver. So I would say that William almost has more like their softness and Mia has more of their hard edge, yeah. which makes her quite appropriately named, being named after Moira, because Moira was very cutthroat and ruthless. And I actually think there's a lot of ways in which the tough calls that Moira made are very similar to what Felicity does. They just had a bit of a different morality. But when it comes to deciding when somebody should or shouldn't die or something like that, they have a similar approach. And I see that sort of from Moira now passed down to Mia as well, which I think is nice. There's elements of both of them in both kids, but they had very different lives. So they got to experience very different sides of their parents, or in William's case, not very much of his parents. But
yeah.
they do.
Well, yeah. what I want to add to that, though, is with everything that you're saying, you're so bang on with it, because what they've been able to write for these characters is that what you're seeing them have, whether it's genetic or from growing up with, what they've been able to glean and pull from their parents, and you're seeing that expressed in who they are. And so I love what's being written for them, but I equally love how these two young actors are portraying it. You can see Felicity and Oliver in each of them for all the exact same things that you just explained. The softness and the hard-edgedness. You can see that in these actors' performances, and you can relate it to Oliver and Felicity. Like, these are actually their kids in the future. It's amazing how good a job they're doing. I really am impressed with both of these actors and the writing that they're getting to get to play with.
Yeah, the actors are doing a really good job interacting with fans on social media as well. I think that's perhaps one of the benefits of them being a bit younger than the rest of the cast. They're really involved in some of the live tweeting and stuff and the memes and reactions, and it's really cute. So if you guys are also present on social media, you may want to check them out, because it's a lot of fun content. And, you know, for this cast, a lot of the rest of the cast doesn't really participate in like live tweeting and stuff quite as much. Stephen Amell does a little bit, but, you know, they're all a little more grown up than some of the other CW actors. But these two are kind of in that vein, which is really fun. Mm-hmm. But in terms of their interactions with their parents, we do get to see that audio recording of Felicity giving them the information they needed, telling them to get it to the team, giving them a bit of context about their separation and why it was necessary for them to stay alive. Are you excited for their trip to the Walled Glades and the outcome of this recording?
Yeah. And again, do you see what I'm saying? We're getting so many answers right now. It's this show is suddenly picking up its pace and really flowing along at not breakneck speeds, but a fun pace. And I found that it was such a stark contrast in the recording from what we saw in just the scene right before, when Felicity and Oliver are talking about never being apart and all that stuff. And then we switch to the future scene and yeah, they were forced to be apart and the kids were separated and didn't even get to grow up together. What a really stark, harsh contrast that was. I mean, things must have changed big time for it to swing so far to the other side of the fence. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'm excited about what's going to happen, what we're going to see, because it sounds like it's going to be all in that full feature episode, like the entire episode. I can't wait. I'm actually excited, especially after this episode, because we've been kind of complaining a little bit for a while. It's kind of slow. Nothing's really happening. But man, in the last two episodes, the future stuff has progressed suddenly, and it's fun.
Yeah, I think it's getting to the place where they may be considering setting up for a spinoff of these young kids once Arrow ends. I know Arrow's spinning off at least one show in its final season, so why not another? But for the time being, the flash forwards were definitely ramping up to a place where we could justify a full episode of flash forward soon, which I believe is coming next week, Flash. Even though I know you don't watch the promo clips for the upcoming week, I suspect you have caught wind of this.
Yeah, and it's just going to be fun. I mean, I hope we get to see Felicity it's a full episode in the future, so we should see Felicity finally, see what she looks like, what she's doing in the future, and maybe we're going to find out what happened to Oliver, because he's hardly even been brought up in the future scenes. So I want all of that to come to fruition.
Yeah, I agree. I want answers, and I don't want to have to wait till the finale, because I want to be able to explore some of the different mysteries in the future before this show is cut short. But yeah. You know what else I want to know answers about?
You want to know what our fans think.
I do. I do. You're getting good at this transition thing.
Just picking up on your cues.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's do that. Into transmissions we go.
Our first transmission this week comes from I'm Just Here For Felicity. She writes in, and I think you're going to appreciate this first line. She says, Dinah screaming in a suit, always sexy. Thank you, recap.
Right there with you.
Also, Felicity in dark blue, thank you, show. And Oliver said, our baby, aw. Also, no body, no death, sadly, Bronze Tiger. So show us a dead Diaz and we'll believe you. Yeah. And why does Laurel 2 even care a little who killed Diaz as long as he is dead? Unless she did and she wants to cover it up. Which, yes, please, because that means she's still bad.
But we have the answer to that. We know it wasn't her. And I think that the reason she'd be interested in it is because of her friendship with Felicity now. So that's why.
Yeah. Well, she says Renee always uses a gun, so why is he so picky about using standard police gear beyond he's just Renee and complaining seems to be his go-to move? Fair. Also, she says, no, Dinah, we knew the cry wouldn't be the same, but it's still sad to see. I feel there's a middle ground to be had with the cops and Oliver. The cops do need to upgrade their gear, maybe look at alternate procedures. But Oliver and company do need to think about legal aspects to keep villains locked up. Dinah's seriously going to ask the most selfish team member, Renee, why they don't get that she's the one who will pay if they can't make it this work. That's fair. Also, talk about wasting your breath. Totally saw that coming. They would say Oliver forced a confession out of Midas because who wouldn't say anything not to have their face melted? Even though it's true, this is what Dinah was saying. They need to think about the legal side of things now.
I'm glad she's defending Dinah here.
She says, so clearly John and Lila are going to adopt Bronze Tiger's kid, given he called him Little Hawk. Mm-hmm. If Diaz is really dead, Emiko just became the hero of the season. Good point. Also, poor Dinah, but yes to Renee saying the cry doesn't fully make her. Mm-hmm. She says, yeah. Mia and William are so their parents. Dinah, stop apologizing to Oliver. He still owes you for when he falsely accused you of being the narc years ago. Which I was trying to remember. Oliver never actually falsely accused her. He was just way too hard on her when Renee was the one who really was partnering with it. Regardless, Dinah doesn't need to apologize to anybody or work with anybody. Quite frankly, I want to see her being a lone wolf, but that's just me. Back to the feedback. She says, seriously, the plastic barrels aren't going to rupture despite being shot up multiple times. Well, that explains any choice of pleather. In parentheses, plastic leather suits in this universe. And you're not a hero either, Laurel 2. Even if Oliver doesn't cheer for Emiko offing Diaz, the fandom will. Anyone willing to place money on the thing they're going after, not being the Archer program? Me neither. A really good episode. I'm excited to see all the flash forward episodes next week.
I will add just one little point there when you're asking about Renee, why he's so picky about his gun. I doubt he uses the same guns the police force do. When someone is into guns and is a professional shooter, they always find a specific model and specific brand or make that they're comfortable with. So a standard issue police gun is not going to work for him. He won't have the same timing. He won't have the same accuracy because he's not comfortable with it. That's all I want to say about that. But everything in your email, oh my God, you are so in tune with us tonight. That was wonderful. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, especially about the Archer program bit. It's really cool to see that that is the key focus in the future, and we're getting to see the development of it now. Mm-hmm. I think tech weaponry and surveillance is such a key point of the show overall, so it's nice to see them be able to conceptualize it all as one thing, which is really fun. And the name, of course, the Archer, yeah. That's notable.
Well, thanks for that awesome email. I'm just here, Felicity. We're going to move on to a voicemail from Destiny Dazzler. I wonder if she's going to say anything this time. Let's see.
Hi, Arrow Squad. It's Destiny Dazzler. I just got done watching the episode. I really loved it this week. I loved the fact that Oliver picked Mia's name, because my dad picked my name in real life, so I thought that was really sweet. I believe that the Connor Hawk in the future who was adopted by Diggle is Bronze Tiger's son that we saw in present day, the little boy that Black Saturn brought to the jail to see him. I think that that is who is Connor Hawk in the future. I'm super interested to see where the coordinates that Felicity gave Mia and William actually lead. Does it lead to her location? Does it lead to where Oliver's buried? Like, I wonder where that's all going. And I'm super curious as to why nobody has thought to build Black Canary a mechanical cry. Like, Cisco could totally do that, like build a device that could help her cry. I don't know why nobody's thought of that. So I'm super excited to see where this is all going and how it all ties together. I'll talk to you soon. Bye.
You know, I saw that mention on the Facebook page too about the mechanical device that Sarah once wore way back in the early seasons of Arrow. It's a good idea. I don't know if they would bring that back around. I mean, maybe they could do something that could just enhance Dinah's cry, but I think her cry is far more powerful anyway. The mechanical one was never quite up to snuff, if you remember early on, but yeah.
Yeah, the mechanical one is just, it visually wasn't great. And actually, Sarah and Laurel both wore that, if I remember correctly. Laurel had that for a while, and now we have Black Siren, who has meta powers, of course. But yeah, the mechanical bit, I'm all for mechanical tech, and frankly, don't hate me for saying this, I think taking away the meta cry was the most kind thing Arrow could do to Dinah, because we get to see her be a hero without meta powers, which is kind of critical for someone who is a true Arrow character, not just a crossover from another show. With that said, of course, I don't know that their little mechanical option is quite up to snuff and does not quite compare to Miss Dinah's original cry, unless they do some major changes to it.
Exactly. And then she also said, she was talking about Connor Hawk. Let's just clear the air right now. It is definitely him, because not only is his name Connor, and not only did Bronze Tiger call him Little Hawk, it's blatant slap us in the face. That is him. So we just need to see the connection between now and the future, and then we'll... But thank you, Dazzler. Next up is an email from Sarah. And Sarah says, "Hey, Arrow Squad, let's talk about the episode first. For a filler episode, I enjoyed it. I thought the scenes between Oliver and Felicity were so cute. Their little exchanges gave me such joy. Totally not surprised that Dig figured it out. The beginning of the episode was pretty funny, seeing the team going through police training. I know this is a TV show, but honestly, you would think that the Team Arrow would know a bit more about legal procedures and what would be admissible in court. Maybe as a law student, it just bugs me more, but like, seriously, read a textbook or something. Anyone seriously surprised when Midas walked the first time? I'm proud of Dinah for sticking up to the team about going the SBCD way. Boy, I said that the wrong way. The SCPD way. I don't think she was out of line. It's her job as captain to play by these rules, and I think the team not backing her was a bit underhanded." Yeah, that's just what you were saying there, Cammy. "We got zero movement in the future scenes, but I did think they were very funny." Huh, I wonder why she thinks that. "My theory for the location Felicity is sending them is either Verdant, because it was in the Glades, although it might have been torn down by now. The underneath may still be there, though. I think it would be a nice nod to season one." Wow, imagine that, bringing Verdant back. "I'll give it a 7.5 poor legal choices out of 10. Now for the big news. Heading into the final season. I'll admit I'm super depressed about it, even though I totally understand where Steven is coming from. A lot of actors hit this point. One thing I do wish that they did was announce it when they renewed it. I think everyone would have taken the news better. We were all expecting a full season, and then it was like, just kidding, and we get a final season along with only 10 episodes. As someone that doesn't watch Flash or Supergirl, I'll be mad if the final Arrow episode is in the crossover. I don't want all of the clutter of the crossover to be the final episode of an amazing series. Can't wait for next week, Sarah. Okay, I want to say something on that last point. Most of our crossovers have come around episode 8 for all shows involved. So if Arrow is 10 episodes, there's a good chance that the crossover will happen, and then we'll get one or two episodes of regular Arrow so they can properly tie things up, end things properly, because I totally agree with you. To end Arrow on the crossover would not be respectful to this show. If they end up killing Oliver off in the crossover, then we need an episode or two to mourn, to see how the rest of our characters deal with it, and to be able to properly say goodbye. So I'm banking on them not ending it on the crossover.
Yeah, I, first of all, fully agree with Mr. Flash. And then also, if I could be salty, Cammy, just for a second, I want to point out that Arrow has been used to spin off every show and every character in the Arrowverse, no exceptions. Arrow's screen time has been repeatedly used for the promotion of other shows to a degree that's not even closely comparable to how the other shows have promoted Arrow. And also, in the crossovers, Arrow has repeatedly given up mid-season finales, 100-episode celebrations, notable moments such as weddings, etc., for the purpose of promoting other shows. In Arrow's final full season, they are spinning off one other show at least, possibly two. So, with all of that said, there could be nothing more fitting Arrow's history than wasting one of their final episodes promoting other shows and other characters, because that's just what they do with Arrow, to be perfectly honest. And I say this mostly being salty, and I don't really mind if the big moments are in the crossovers, and they'll probably give some big nod to Arrow. And at the end of the day, even when Arrow decides to leave the Arrowverse, it will still be called the Arrowverse. But I fully expect Arrow's final 17 episodes to still include constant promotion of the other shows. That's all. Salty Cammy over.
No, continue being salty leading into the next email for sure. But what I want to add on to that is the only thing that I'll be okay with because if the crossover is between three shows or four shows, and each show has kind of had its dedicated episode within the crossover, if they dedicate the last one to be mostly Arrow, let Arrow end it out, and if Oliver dies and we see how the rest of the Arrowverse deals with it, we see how Flash deals with it, we see how Legends deal with it, or whoever's involved, if we see, because I mean, especially Barry and Oliver are like best friends, and the chemistry between those two on screen, we have to have a moment between the two of them so that they get to say goodbye to each other on screen as their characters. There has to be a moment there. So if Oliver is going to die or whatever's going to happen to him, Barry has to be able to deal with it. And they can only do that in the crossover. So if they do that much, I'll be okay with it. I still want a final Arrow episode all on its own.
I strongly agree. You and I will go storm the barricade if you don't give us that. Just kidding. We won't be storming anything, I promise.
All right, why don't you take this next email with that salty attitude, because I think it's probably fitting for what's being said here.
Thank you, Flash. I would love to. So we have an email from Mr. Montefescu. He says, hello, Arrow Squad. This is Monotonous Montefescu here. Thank you, Montefescu. He says, I don't have much to say about this plot boiler. The directing was pedestrian. The camera work was mediocre, the script entirely straightforward, fish out of water, trying to swim in thin air. Of course, the canary loses her voice, and everyone, vigilante and SCPD, meets at the happy middle to take down the tycoon Midas, selling dangerous dissolving bullets to warring street gangs. And oh yeah, Emiko is seen in the vicinity of the late unlamented Ricardo Diaz marshmallow roast, and Laurel finds out about the same. Maybe something comes out of it, but for this episode, yawn. In 2040, the big reveal that Felicity put on tape is that the Glades is the epicenter of everything, and William and Maya should run before Felicity does what she does and incidentally not look for her. Yawn. Rate for acting, directing, writing. 333 out of 555. Hope the future episode is better than this. Wow. I mean, here's the thing. Variety's important. Almost everybody else seemed to like this, but we've got to have some criticism mixed into the pot, and Montefescu is here to serve.
Yeah, I mean, everyone's allowed to have their opinions and feelings. I just can't say I agree with anything that you said this time. I absolutely loved the episode. It was fun. If you think it's boring because it's a filler episode or whatever the feelings are, I think it was a necessary episode, and they had as much fun with it as they could, and it got our team back together. It was a necessary transition and a stepping stone, and I thought they progressed a lot. It was fun. Mm-hmm. But that's okay.
I would like to strongly agree with Montefescu on one point, and that is his comment that Ricardo Diaz is unlamented, because I, too, am not lamenting Ricardo Diaz.
Okay.
Thank you, Emiko. I appreciate her service.
Let's move on to an email from Christy, and she says, when the mayor first deputized Team Arrow, I was under the impression that the team would be able to operate as normal with permission from the SCPD. So I was rather irritated with the beginning of the episode when they were forced to operate like real police officers. I mean, Felicity wearing a police uniform and having to use their ancient software was really cramping her style. I thought Dinah had some really poignant moments that really softened her character's I'm a police officer moments in this episode. She's still a phenomenal fighter even without her cry. Speaking of which, watching her choke out that last cry that nearly got her killed was heartbreaking. I'm sad that she won't be out on the field with the team anymore. Yeah. I'm glad people are feeling for Dinah what I've... Well, you guys know I love her to death, but just this episode really, really got a lot of emotion stirred up around her, so I'm glad you guys are feeling that for her. That touches me dearly. She goes on, I think Black Siren needs to take her info about Emiko straight to Felicity. They've learned to trust each other, and I think Felicity would believe her. I'm very intrigued by Bronze Tiger's son being called Hawk. A very cool twist that Diggle will possibly adopt him, although that might mean Tiger never gets out of prison or dies. Exactly what I'm thinking. I also have some thoughts about the show's ending. It's really strange to be watching this knowing we have a finite amount of episodes remaining, almost like impending doom. At the same time, the show can't go on forever, and I'd rather the showrunners be given the time to give it a proper ending rather than being cancelled on a cliffhanger. It still makes me really sad because it's been my favorite show for so long. Also, this means the end of Arrow Squad, which is just as sad. Exactly, Christiana, and that's exactly what the point I'm trying to make, and you're adding to it, that it might be weird to know that the show's being canceled this early on, but the positive is that they get to write a proper ending. They get to end the show the way they want, what our characters deserve, what the show deserves because of how long it's gone. And as Cammy was saying, all the spinoffs it's kicked off, everything in the Arrowverse is all owed to Arrow. So this allows them to properly send it off instead of ending and getting canceled mid-season when they weren't expecting it and we don't get any answers to anything and we're all left with our arms in the air going, what TF? So this is much preferred. Anyway, she ends, with such limited time left, I wish they would spend most of the time in the present instead of the flash forwards. There isn't enough time to really pay off all the story they are creating in the future, and I'm far more invested in the current characters. Yeah, and you know what? With this future episode that's coming, they might give enough away that maybe there won't be so much for the last few episodes of the season. And we don't know what they're going to do with 10 episodes next season. If there's going to be flash forwards or flashbacks, maybe nothing. Maybe it's all going to be in the present timeline. So we'll see what they do with the future episode and what that might lead to for the last few after it. But thank you so much. Good email there.
Thank you, Christy, and thank you, Flash. And our next email is from Stormy Woods. She writes in to say that she'll give this episode an 8 out of 10. She says the cop should really listen to Oliver because he and his team are the only ones catching criminals in this city. Vigilantes can't do what they need when they are hindered by red tape and outdated systems. And it's especially silly to see Dig getting trained by the cops when this man was in Argus and Army Special Forces. In the end, I guess the anti-vigilante law is about to be done away with, according to Dinah. Silly question, but why is everyone minus Oliver wearing masks when everyone knows who they are? That is not a silly question. That's a great question.
Yeah, I saw that come up in the Facebook page too, and I was trying to think about that. I think there doesn't really have to be a good answer, a good reason to it to me. It's just part of their costume. It's part of their outfit. I think they look cooler. Like, I actually still prefer Oliver with his hood and his mask. That, to me, is the Green Arrow. I like the mask look. It's part of the uniform. Simple as that.
Yeah, okay, here's the thing, and I apologize for using the middle of Stormy's email for this little explanation, but I just to tack on to that. The reason why masks are so important for vigilantes is that it is absolutely necessary to the definition of a vigilante hero for them to be evading someone. The whole point of being a vigilante is that you are choosing to go above the law and force your own moral code on others because you believe it is for the greater good, and you are taking the risk that the law, the government, the powers that be, etc., can and will stop you if they figure out who you are and what you're doing. You're choosing to take that risk. You're saying your personal freedom is less important than somebody else's life and well-being, and you're willing to put your own personal freedom and your own personal need for the government's approval of your actions aside because you would rather save somebody's life than stay out of prison, right? So as soon as you put these heroes in a position where they are requiring the police and the government, et cetera's approval in order to function, you're taking out a necessary element of them being a vigilante hero. The second that Oliver has to answer to the government and is choosing to not go above the law is the second he stops being a vigilante. Now, there are fantastic and valid arguments to be made that characters like Samantha Watson have made before about how nobody should be a vigilante and nobody should choose to go above the law. But the whole point of vigilante hero stories is that they are stories where someone decides that for the greater good, they're going to sacrifice their life, like Oliver, be willing to go to jail, be sold away from their family, all of this sort of stuff, right? In order to save someone else in a way that the law, the government, and the police cannot do. So what they're doing right now by teaming up with the police and being this sort of special forces team, that's fine, but they're ultimately not being vigilantes. So when we see them put on the mask, it's sort of a nod to their vigilante origins, but they are not that now, which is why that's not a silly question. They are, as Flash said, much cooler with that aspect of their character. But for now, they don't really have it. So it's just sort of the false pretense of that. But
yeah. Now, let me add one more little thing, because I'm pretty sure Stormy appreciates that something in her email would strike up this much more conversation between us. So that's what feedback is all about, is they get us talking about things that we didn't think of. So what I also want to add is imagine the Arrow world, Star City. Imagine this being real. This is real life. And you're out on the streets fighting crime. Not every single criminal out there is going to actually know who you are. They may have missed the news report. They may not pay attention to social media. They might not know. Yes, Oliver Queen is the Green Arrow, but I don't know what he looks like. Who's Oliver Queen? I've never seen him before. So why not wear a mask to just continue to protect that identity? That's another way you can look at it.
Yeah, maybe. I suspect at this point in the Star City history, I think most of the villains around may have figured it out, but some of them may still need to learn.
But even just street thugs, like, you know, guy, if they stop someone robbing a bank, they stop a drug deal, whatever, those guys might not know what he looks like or what Dinah looks like or whatever. So why not cover your face so that in case you don't stop them, they don't know who you are. They can't come after you or your family because they don't know what you look like.
that's a possibility. Yeah.
But all right.
Well, diving back into Miss Stormy's email, she says, all of the scenes with Oliver and Felicity just made my heart happy. Oliver choosing Mia's name and it being because of his mom truly brought tears to my eyes. Aww. Yes, that was a cute scene. Plus, how cute are the expectant parents, Oliver and Felicity? Just a joy to watch. It will never get old to me when Oliver is in awe of Felicity's intelligence. Yeah. They are just working so hard to make the city safe for everyone, especially their two kids. And Diggle finding out about the baby was so cute. And Dig better be the godfather. Plus, he's already giving candies to help with morning sickness. Seeing Dig talk to Felicity about her security system and how impressive she is, that's just more hints that Felicity's getting the Archer program and smoke tech up and running. It's nice to see the lair back, and Felicity spared no expense getting it back up to its former glory.
Yeah, side question, where's the money coming from, too? Because that is a heck of a lot of expensive tech in there to rebuild that arrow cave. Who paid for that?
That is a great question, Flash. Well, she goes on to say, Bronze Tiger has a son named Connor, who has a nickname Little Hawk. No doubt this will be the boy Dig adopts, because either Tiger dies or can't get out of prison. Tiger did help Oliver in prison and saved Lila's life on an Argus mission years ago, so I could see Dig feeling like he owed him and raises his son.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Given that Tiger told Laurel that he saw Emiko kill Diaz, he probably will have a target on his back. Siren seems to have Emiko's number, but Emiko believes she won't be believed if she tells the team. And while I'm sure they will be weary of Siren, I see Felicity standing up for her and doing what she can to prove it's true.
Yeah.
She says the flash forwards focusing on William and Mia has kept me interested and invested. Their bond is so fun to watch and see develop. Both actors are doing a great job, and William telling Mia she reminds him of their dad. I could totally see that, but I see a lot of their mom in her also. The other scene that got me really emotional was the playing of Felicity's message. She and Oliver clearly did what they did to keep their kids safe, which I understand. And when Felicity gave William and Mia a location to give the team and then get the hell out of Star City, there was no way William and Mia were going to leave their mom behind and will be going to the Glades. Next week's promo has me so hyped to see Mia's birth and Oliver and Felicity look so happy. She says, now that we know all that Arrow is ending, I just want to take a minute and say what this show has meant to me. I've loved these characters for going on 7 years, and the enjoyment they have brought me is immense. The friends I've met because of Alicity and the OTA fandom have been some of the most amazing people. The Alicity and OTA fandom have done so many fantastic charity fundraisers that I was honored to take part in. The show will always hold a place in my heart, and I'm better for it.
See, that this is the kind of stuff, that's why I wanted to have our little bit at the beginning about what this show has meant, and we're definitely going to get into all of this as the season's coming to a close, and I love hearing that. I want to hear from all of our feedbackers what the show has meant to them.
Yeah.
For sure.
I agree, and honestly, just seeing these names that we recognize and people that we talk to now on social media and over email and all of that over the course of, I guess it's been years now that I've been on Arrow Squad, it's been so fantastic, and it adds so much meaning to this show. And I know, Flash, as well, for you, back when you were a feedbacker and now you are a co-host, and it's just been such a cool journey, and it's all about the connections with other fans.
Yeah, I mean, because I'm friends with the original starters of the show, Kevin and Brian, and you know, I actually went to Atlanta just to hang out with them at Dragon Con, and so because of Arrow Squad. So yeah, there's so much to be thankful for about all of this. And what I wanted to add to Stormy's email here is the just talking about Oliver and Felicity and the way they are together. I want to just make sure everybody knows, even though I was annoyed with Felicity in that one scene, it was just that one scene. Don't get me wrong. I still love Felicity because the rest, everything else in this episode, she's magic as always. And the love between her and Oliver, and I've said it before on this podcast, because I think it's funny. I don't know how Stephen Amell's wife is not jealous of what the chemistry those two have on screen, because it's palpable. It's real. It blows me away. The chemistry that they can create on screen together, it's crazy. And then I agreed with her too about her point about Diggle being trained by the cops when he was in Argus and Army Special Forces. The police force should recognize and acknowledge that and say, and hire Diggle as a special consultant kind of role, and he trains the police force to be better. Totally agree with you there.
Mm-hmm.
But thank you so much for that, Stormy. We're going to move into an email from Carrie Johnson, which we haven't heard from for a while, so it's good that he's here again. And he says, let's start with what I loved about Training Day. I love that Bronze Tiger Ben Turner popped up again, reminding us that the prison arc was very compelling and there are still narrative threads to explore there. Soon as he said he had a kid, I knew it would be Connor. That means Tiger died or never got out of prison, which is a bummer and another failure for Oliver, perhaps since he said he'd work to get him out of prison. Yeah, see, I can't wait to see what they're going to do with that. Obviously, bringing Tiger back in, they are going to finish that story arc, so this is awesome. I love that Dinah was able to share with Renee how important being an officer and captain is to her. I can't wait to watch her balance being a Black Ops vigilante and police chief. That would be a great show in its own right, by the way. I totally agree. Here's what I didn't like so much. I understand Arrow has chosen to limit metahumans, but removing Canary's Cry will never sit well with me. I don't see it as a crutch in that she rarely used it, but it's just as much a part of her character as Oliver's steady aim, Felicity's brains, and Dig's military training. The deed has been done, so I'll have to get over it. Since they've taken away her cry, I hope they continue to plant the seeds of Dinah training heroes, because other than her cry, Canary, in the comics and the animated world, is most noted for being one of the best hand-to-hand combatants in the DC universe, and her main Justice League job has been to train new recruits. Yes, Carrie, I brought that up before. Thank you for backing me on all that. That is what is very cool about Dinah and the Black Canary and what she means to the Justice League. And this kind of ties into what Cammy was saying about the fact that she can still be a true kick-ass hero without her cry. You know, that part, I hope, settles your mind a little bit as well. I'm still not 100% sure that her cry is completely gone. We'll have to see. I do agree with you, though, that I don't like that they've taken that from her, because it's Canary. I love that about her. And your point about the fact that she never used it much. Remember, I brought it up that she only uses it in most dire circumstances, because she is such a good hand-to-hand fighter that she doesn't need it all the time. It's only in moments where she extremely needs it that she uses it. So we'll have to see what she does there. Anyway, to continue on, I want to see more of that two present day Zoe and much more of that in the future with Mia, Connor, and everybody. By the way, where the hell is Roy? Yeah, my thoughts exactly. I hope the flash forward episode gives him much more screen time. Here's what I want to see now that we know the ending of Arrow is near. Okay, before I get to that, I don't know why Roy wasn't in this episode. I guess because it was just all about Mia and William, but I agree with you. He better be in the future episode. What I want to see, though, because actually you brought this up, Cammy, I meant to bring it in earlier when we were talking about our heroes. We've got this whole tattoo about the Mark of Four. I'm hoping to see that play out towards the end of the season, that either the end of the season or the end of the show next season, that we see them get the tattoos, we see them explain or express to each other why they're getting it and what it means to them, and that means bringing Roy into the present timeline. That's something else I want to see. All right, back to Carrie's email. Here's what I want to see now that we know Arrow is ending. I don't want Oliver dead. I want the Monitor to give Oliver the duty of being sort of an overseer, where he is removed from the timeline, which would explain his future absence, but it would allow him to do good and maybe visit the timeline on occasion. I want Curtis to do guest spots on Legends. He and Gideon would provide fantastic banter. I want Laurel 2.0 to transfer to Gotham's DA's office so she can be a sassy sparring partner with Batwoman. I want David Ramsey to do guest spots on Black Lightning, not as John Diggle, but the Lightningverse version of Lynn Stewart's brother, John Stewart, and he could be that world's Green Lantern. I want the CW to do a 3-episode miniseries each year focusing on Arrow of the future with Mia, Connor, and William. Felicity and Oliver could pop up there from time to time. Holy cow, that is a list of fantastic hopes and dreams and requests. I am on par with every single one of them. Here's what he'll miss. During Cammy's YouTube hit, I was reminded that the end of the show would also mean the end of this fantastic Arrow community that you and Martin have so lovingly fostered. I will miss that most of all. But when Arrow ends, we could always decide to do an entire series rewatch, re-examination, watching an episode a week from the very beginning. Just a thought. Talk with you guys next week. Aw, see, now that stuff's going to start coming out, Cammy, and they're going to make us cry. At least me, anyway. I don't know about you, cold-hearted Cammy, but they're going to make me cry with such kind words, you guys. Jeez.
Carrie, I appreciate your kind words, and I will still be around. They can't get rid of me, even if Arrow goes away. No. YouTube show and all. But we appreciate all of your kind words and your love for Arrow Squad. I mean, yeah. That is what brings us all together. And I want to also especially say I love the ideas you have, not only for the characters just crossing over to other shows, but specifically which shows they should cross over to. There was some thought put into that. And as always, I like your thoughts.
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to respond to you maybe in a personal email about some of your ideas. Maybe we can discuss that off air here. But this is just an idea right now off the hop. Me and Cammy will probably talk as the show is getting towards its end. We'll come up with an idea of somehow maybe we could all stay together, stay in contact. When Arrow ends, and yes, Arrow Squad has to come to an end too, we'll figure something out. But we've already mentioned that me and Cammy were thinking, how fun would it be to go back and podcast about the first couple seasons that we didn't get to do because we didn't take the show over until season 5. So maybe that's an idea, Carrie. I like that you brought it back. We'll discuss it. You never know.
Yeah. I think I joined in season 4, but the two of us started co-hosting together in season 5, and there are some intro episodes that would be really fun to see with that that lens of knowing how the show ends once we get there, which is going to be cool.
Well, let's move into our final email. I feel bad, Scarlet Vixen, we always leave it to the end, but it's really just because that's the order that we get them in the email links, and so we just throw them all in one after the other. The thing is, your pros and cons are always so fun, so it's kind of a great one to end on. And Cammy, it's your turn this week.
I will happily take this one. Scarlet Vixen says, "Hello, squad. Another week, another episode, and I gotta say it was a good one for me. I'm going to rate this one an 8.75 out of 10, which I'm glad about because this is also a follow-up to hearing that next season is going to be Arrow's last, and I gotta say I'm still processing this information, but I am super bummed. The one good thing is them knowing that it's the end, so they can put their all into it and give us a heck of a 10-episode run. Now, pros and cons. Our pros are Alicity. All the Alicity feels in this episode were fantastic, and I'm loving that they're showing them in a normal relationship and not creating or manufacturing drama for no reason. This is where Steven and Emily shine, so why not just leave them in this place? And Felicity's random cravings for mint chip are so on point, and Oliver's face is priceless. He's just like, yep, come on, I'll get it for you.
He is good. He's gotten so good with his facial expressions this season. I just seen a huge leap in performance from Stephen Amell. It's awesome to watch.
Mm-hmm. The next one's the bunker. So great seeing the team back in the bunker. It's been so long since that set was used, and I hope they use it until the very last episode because it is my favorite set.
Yeah.
Also, Mia and William, loving their sibling dynamic, especially when he said Mia reminded him of their father. You could see her face and how important that was to her. The playing of the tape Felicity left was emotional. Raises the same questions, though. Why were they kept apart? Especially since the scene before, Oliver and Felicity were talking about how their kids would have each other's backs. So what happened?
Exactly.
Also, Laurel and Emiko, such potential in this, and I really enjoyed their chemistry. I'm curious on how this is going to play out. Yeah. So Diggle, his excitement over the Alicity baby, bringing Felicity ginger candies for her sickness, telling her she's on to something with her security program, which we all know what that is, smoke tech. Reassuring to see it getting closer and closer, and it's just nice to have the real Diggle back, and not to mention back in his suit.
Yes,
I strongly agree. It's been nice to have the real version of our Mr. John Diggle back on screen finally in this last half of the season. Yep. All right, so some cons. Dinah. This isn't a real con, but I do have to point out most of this episode, she was bugging me with this whole buy the book thing, but after she explained it, it made sense. So I forgive her.
Whew, good.
Yeah. Emiko, so you kill Diaz, which I'm getting was at the request of Dante, but Diaz knew who she was by last episode, where they played it as if he recognized her, the person. So there is a story there. But if she's against my Oliver, then she's just automatically a con.
Yeah, we don't know yet. We'll have to see what's going on there.
And the last con is the mayor. Can she just leave or get fired already? I mean, I guess it's a good thing that she made them do their own task force and is signing the repeal for the Vigilante Act, but it wasn't by her own doing that she was forced. Other notes, the beginning where they're all training with the SCPD was hilarious. Yes, I agree. They were way more advanced than these guys, and their looks were classic. And the wink Oliver and Felicity gave each other when they were talking about going to get drinks, and she made up her excuse. Love.
Yeah, that was cute.
Time for me to go enjoy some mint chip. Next week's look like it will be another good one. Until then, Vixen bids adieu.
Fantastic as always, Vixen. Thank you so much.
Well, next week's episode is entitled Star City 2040. Flash, it seems like we might be jumping into the future.
It seems like it. That's that full future episode, which hopefully answers a lot of questions. I'm excited about it. Can't wait to see what they do and see more interactions with William and Mia, because that's going to be fun. And bring back Roy! Dang it!
I am excited to see our Queen family children, and that will be Monday, March 18th. So we will see you guys back here, same time, same place. But until then, you can always find more information on arrowsquad.com. And if you want to chat more with Martin and I, you can find us on the Facebook page or on Twitter. All of our information is on the website.
Yeah, we always forget to mention that stuff in case people want to reach out to us. Like, by all means, especially with the show coming to an end, reach out to me. You guys have become fantastic feedbackers, and I do consider you guys friends, even though we've never met. When I hear from you every week and I'm responding to the words that you say, that's enough for a friendship for me. So I would love to connect with everybody. Maybe we can find some other TV shows to talk about once this one's all said and done. I don't know. We'll figure something out. But yeah, I want to thank everybody, as always, for such good feedback and the kind words. You guys really tugging at my heartstrings here. I'm welling up already. I can tell as this season nears an end and the show nears an end, you guys are going to hear Flash breakdown on this podcast. That's how it's going to come to be. But I just appreciate all of you. So I want to make sure you know that. So until next week, Cammy, this is a good one. I am excited for our finishing run here. This is The Flash, signing off.
And this is Cammy. Goodbye.
Arrow Squad is presented by Golden Spiral Media. You can find all our contact info, links, and feedback form at arrowsquad.com. We'd also love to have you leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. If you're looking for other great discussions about your favorite TV shows, check out our partner podcasts at goldenspiralmedia.com. As always, please share the show, and thanks for listening.